along peacefully with eternity, with the everlasting rightness of things, with the eternal justice and the eternal mercy of the infinite. Do not try to get along with the false notions for which you may give your life, for which you may sacrifice your happiness, or break the responsibilities you have with family and home. Accept all of these things, as they do in the Pure Land sect of Buddhism in Japan. The Pure Land sect says, do not go out and become a monk primarily until you have actually fulfilled all obligations of family. When your children are grown, when your children are well established, when your family is happy, and when your marriage partner has the same convictions and dedications, then settle down quietly to the unfoldment of your own inner life. Begin to think in terms of freeing the soul within you from all the burden of appetites, all the burden of false purposes, all the conflicts and competitions of society. Just realize, if you can, and we all gain little by little the power to do this, that the great reality is the discovery of the eternal peace within ourselves, and that that peace is the form of deity that is most obvious in the complex structure of mortal bodies. So then, this type of thing comes along, you no longer try to be impressive. You no longer try to help people unless they need your help. I've told you before about this monk who I think is a perfect example of a type of relationship. He had been a wealthy man and been a businessman, and the sorrows of life and the disappointments of life fell upon him. And he finally decided that his miseries were largely due to the fact that he was so definitely always trying to prevent himself from hurting, that everything had to be sacrificed to him having his way about things, and that when he didn't have his way, the persons who stood between were enemies, they were vicious people, they were misunderstanding people, and he was just tied up into this pattern for most of his earlier life. So he simply put on the yellow robe and became a mendicant. And he made a very simple career out of being a mendicant. He went along the country road and he saw a house with a leaky roof. So he mended the roof, blessed the people, and went on and charged nothing for doing it. In another house, there was a group of people. Someone was very sick. And the children were underprivileged and in trouble. And the house was run down. And many people were afraid to enter because of the ailment. So he just went in, washed the children, gave them baths, cooked the food, helped to nurse the sick person till they recovered, and then disappeared. He spent nearly 40 years doing this, from one place to another. His only desire was to serve. He never tried to teach them anything. He didn't have to, because he brought thousands of them to religion by the living of it. And there have been persons in all religions that have made these kind of contributions. And they are the ones whose advice is probably the most vital of all, because it is obvious that it is a solution to the greatest need of the human heart, the need to serve. So we watch these things every day, and we read in the papers and we read the books about all the new things that are happening and the wonderful discoveries that are being made. And many of them are very good. But when we come to these problems and start reading the books, it might be very well for a person who is reading because he's in trouble to pause for a moment before he studies the cure recommended and finds out what the cure is inside of himself. If he is an alcoholic, he does not need to read books on the subject. He has only one problem. He's got to get over the ailment or it will destroy him. There are many ways he can fight it and he can win. But regardless of anything, it is an action of his own. 1,000 people can tell him to quit. But if he doesn't want to, he won't. Many people who are suffering, I know several persons today who are suffering from career problems. They are not willing to live within their own capacities. They have finally gotten up to be managers of a big business or one of the vice presidents or something of that nature, and they are going to be miserable until they get the top spot. Well, in many instances, they are not suited to the top spot. And in struggling desperately to transcend themselves, they make enemies. They try to downgrade other possible candidates because they want that spot. And then in the middle of it all, they have a thrombosis or something of this nature. The system breaks down completely under the pressure of this terrific ambition. Now, you can tell those people to stop and look, slow down, take it easy. I know cases where families have pleaded with these persons to take it easy, but the ambition drive is just too strong. That ambition will end in trouble. It has to. But when it comes to advising these people, you can say to them, yes, you're doing too much. You are not living the way you should. We can also suggest maybe a way in which they might be able to ease up a little on these problems. Diversify. Many of these people have never had a hobby. They've never done any vocational thinking. Get them started on some kind of rest. Put a golf club in their hands and tell them to go out and get into the air, to do something else to help themselves along. Sometimes they will do it. Most often they won't do it. But we have no right to go in there and say to this individual, it is divinely appointed that you play golf. And we have it from the archangels that if you don't, you'll get into trouble. Man will probably then go back, and if he doesn't do the things he shouldn't do, he'll be tempted to. So these things won't work. We cannot help people beyond the words of a few syllables. Things like the words of Christ, the Last Supper, or something of this nature, are very simple words. They're words that are supposed to go right past the mind and go into the heart. They are supposed to represent an inner dedication to values, a deeper spiritual insight. And they are always words of kindness, words that are not critical. Today we have a great world of people fighting each other, everyone afraid of everyone. And this, in the fact that we have in this world today probably 1.5 billion Christians who claim to believe in the words of Christ. Many of them have been baptized, attend regular church, go to confession, and receive extreme unction. But why do these people not ever seem to get around to the words of the person they consider to be God on earth, the personal only born of the Father, where he says very simply, love ye one another. Now everything else really in the form of advice fails, because that is the basic advice. And on that you can build all kinds of relationships. You can make all kinds of interpretations of how things should be. You can build an elaborate philosophy to justify the proof that peace is better than war. But unless the individual finally realizes that the final bond that can hold humanity together, is love and nothing else, and that this love is sincere, that is the kind of love that will sacrifice self for the one who is the beloved. And if we will sacrifice ourselves for that world to which we belong, it won't be long before peace will be here. But while we continue to preach it and nobody does anything about it, we are in the same position we were in before. Now comes the question, can we force this peace? Can we demand the peace? Can we assassinate anyone who doesn't keep the peace? Can we jail the person who is contentious? Are we ever going to be able to create this peace by a frontal attack upon the vices of society? Chances are we will never be able to do it. We will never be able to do it because legislation cannot do it. And wherever legislation attempts to change natural temperament, we have the proof of the fact that karma is a responsibility that descends upon anyone and anything that tries to force a change in human nature. You can't do it this way. The change has to come from within the person. Deity knows this, or the universal system is aware of this fact, because gradually it forces upon the individual the need for self-correction. We avoid it as long as we can. We like to be selfish. We want to gratify our appetites and ambitions. But gradually, one by one, we come to this desperate fact that all of this competition has no significance in terms of space or eternity. All of these things come and pass away again. Everything that we have fades away. It is only that which we are that endures. And we want that which we are to be something we can endure in peace. We do not want what we are to be at war. We do not wish the faults that we allow to arise in the personality. We do not want them to infect the soul behind the personality and gradually corrupt all the peace and happiness that we can possibly hope for. So, we have to say to a person, first of all, make peace with the realities of life. Do it in your own way. But come out with something that you've done that you're proud of for the good of others. Remember the wisdom of St. Francis de Assisi. Remember the kindness and thoughtfulness of the great mystics of the past. And try to gain the answer to your grief by rising triumphantly above the causes in your own nature which brought about that grief. Griefs are things that we all suffer from, but we recover from them if we have proper attitudes. Someone will say, I've had been asked a number of times, why don't more people have better attitudes? Well, one reason is that in our society, attitudes, good attitudes, are not taught. We are not taught from childhood that which will bring peace to ourselves and others. We are taught to take advantage of the weakness of each other. We are taught that we are still living in a jungle, and that in this jungle each individual must scratch his own way. But actually, there cannot be any peace in society until that peace is experienced within the heart of persons. Now, it doesn't have to be in everyone's heart at one time, but it has to be something that spreads, grows, unfolds, and enriches. And if it starts to grow, it can spread just as war has spread. It can become the spread of a great peacefulness, and gradually nearly everyone who has ever suffered will be glad to stop suffering. But it has to start within ourselves. So when someone comes to you and wants to know what to do about buying that new house or something of this nature, the answer is to take it inside of self. Don't ask another person for the answer. Examine the facts and you'll find the answer. But if your ambitions, your selfishness, or your cupidity is stronger than your judgment, you will not find the answer and will suffer the karmic consequences. All karma, basically, is the result of the wrong applications of energy in the processes of existence. And whether it is our own energy that is wrong, or whether we've coached somebody else to use their own energy badly to try to affect us in some special manner, the fact remains that the only answer is that doing it right creates no karma. Now you say, well, maybe it should create good karma. Well, in a sense, I don't know whether you need to say it that way. We all say it. I've said it many times. But if we do nothing to cause bad karma, the result is good karma. It is peace. We have done nothing to disturb the values of life. The values of life suddenly reveal themselves in all their natural beauty, in their wisdom and insight. If we are not breaking the rules, we do not know there are any rules. If we are keeping the patterns of life correctly, life is a beautiful, natural experience. And we can face it with the strength of internal character. Certainly we will have our ups and downs, or we must have those, because we are part of a mixed society. But we will always have the internal resources to come out triumphantly, happily, and peacefully from the situations that present themselves. So we'll say that somebody now, in this pressure of things, says they or feels that they know exactly what somebody else ought to do. This individual doesn't want to do it, therefore he is stubborn, he is ignorant, he is unpleasant, because he does not want to do just what we want him to. So we may find ways of trying to convert him, more or less forcibly. We may say to him, well, if you don't change your ways and do what I suggest, you are not in our employment any longer. That is one way of putting a pressure on a situation. Another one is, if you don't wish to live in harmony with the laws of our family, get out of the house. This is another pressureful thing, which is a way of trying to change a person to meet our requirements, when in reality we should only change people to help them to meet their own requirements. Then we may say, if you join this other religion, I will disown you. That is another mistake. Sometimes it goes so far as to say, if you do this particular thing, I'll kill you. It is this tremendous pressure, determination to change other people. But never giving these other people an example of the benefit of a better attitude toward life. The revenge goes on. It is never solved, never settled. The antagonisms build and build, and then we wonder why the world is in the trouble it's in most of the time. But wherever we try to force, it may not be so strenuously. But now there are many different doctrines floating around, which in a sense are perfectly all right. There's no reason why a person shouldn't follow the religion that is closest to his own heart. But when he joins something that forces him to change his own internal life in a direction he does not want to change it, then something is wrong. If this belief cause forces him to do things that he is not ready to do yet, and he tries to do them, he will be in trouble, and the group will be the victim of its own bad karma. If this other group wants him to perform actions that are unethical, for instance, desert a family or neglect people, or to turn their financial resources at the expense of family into some organization, these things are leverages in which a person is over-influenced, forced to do something, either by intimations or by actual threats that are not what he wants to do, then he is in trouble. And the only answer in that situation is, if what you are asked to do is below the level of your own integrities, refuse. And if the refusal makes you an enemy to the group, retire. Do not allow any belief, no matter how religious it may be worded, to cause you to break in any way the commandments in the Sermon on the Mount. Never compromise principles, because human beings demand it. That organizations are built up which are contrary to ethics, that is their business. But we cannot afford for one moment to be over-influenced by them. So that is where your bad karma comes in. Now, if you have become associated with a group and it wants you to do something that you shouldn't do and expects you to propaganda that group and influence other people to do what you do not believe, and you try to do it, then you are making karma. You are breaking the integrities of life. Now, karma is not just a penalty. Buddhism, Hinduism, most of the religions of the world that accept karma as a reality do not regard it as basically a punishment. It is a challenge. Karma is not something desperately bad that's falling on your head. Karma is a gentle reminder that you have done it wrong, and that therefore it is time to rearrange your values. Karma is not something that curses you to the end of time. Karma is something that invites you by an object lesson to improve your own conduct. If you accept karma as a challenge of integrities and rise above it as such, you will find that there is always a silver lining and there is always a compensation for the improvement of conduct. So never think that karma is like damnation or something of that nature. It is not even purgatorial. It is simply nature telling you that you have broken the rules. And that's because you have broken the rules on one level, you are physically ill. You're not physically ill because you were predestined and foreordained to be sick. You are ill because you have broken some kind of a rule of health. You are worried. Well, your worries are probably quite justified in some things. But if you worry and get headaches, it maybe become ill, then your worry is obviously causing a karmic reaction, because nature says you will not get far by worrying. Worrying is a destructive emotion, and destructive emotions never result in good. When the problem comes along, consider it, meditate upon it, study it, but never fear it. Try to do the thing that will take care of it simply. If it cannot be taken care of, learn to patiently live with it until it clears. But do not worry. Worry is a negative emotion. It will give headaches, it will give sickness, it will disturb your personal life, it will disturb your career and everything else. The same is true of mostly every negative attitude. You come through a life and you come in here and there's a drive in you of ambition. There is a demand for success that seems to be built into you. Well, that is in all probabilities part of the message that comes through from a previous life to remind you that you were trying to be more than you should be then and haven't gotten over it. When this type of thing comes along, relax, do the thing that you can do well, but do not strive beyond a reasonable point or you'll get nothing out of it but sickness. If in the course of all of these experiences you begin to flirt with justice and do things that are illegal, immoral, or unreasonable, then more karma comes into play. But if you correct these things, the karma ceases. And if you didn't do them in the first place, there wasn't any karma. And the individual who lives a simple, direct life is going to be the saint of tomorrow. In this world we're living in now, we're coming to the end of the 20th century. And we're coming into it in an awful mess. Now, this mess is not quite as bad as it looks, we'll admit that. But it is something that is a great cause of worry and a great cause of anxiety. And we're beginning to see that selfishness is building up a debt that can never be paid, that ambition is ruining nation after nation, and that personal selfishness is destroying populations. All of these things are very depressing, and rightly so. But they all arise from the same simple fact, namely that we won't keep the rules. And because we will not keep the rules and do not want to hear about the rules, because they interfere with our personal fulfillment, so-called, we are in this position and we are coming gradually to the end of the century. There is only one answer to this problem, and that is to get back again to the basic integrities. There is no reason why these vast empires, monopolies, and aggregates should continue. There is no reason why baseball players should get $10 million a year. There is no reason for this tremendous urge for wealth. And again, the words of Christ come into mind, that we should store up our wealth or treasures in heaven and not in this world. Because anything we store up here will be destroyed, corroded, or stolen. So we can just simply begin to think that by maybe the beginning of the next century, there will be a kind of fall. We fell once out of heaven, and we fell into a serious situation, if we can believe the biblical stories. But next time, perhaps, we'll fall on our feet. Perhaps the next time, we will realize that there are certain simple integrities which are the best for all of us. And that when we have these integrities, we can be happy. We can develop talents and abilities. We can unfold resources of consciousness, resources of art, music, literature. We can travel. We can do all kinds of things that are nice and pleasant. As soon as we stop this tremendous pressure for values that can never be fulfilled. So if we break the rules, it is not so much that we are being punished. It's simply that the blackbirds have come home to roost. We have done certain things, and we must take the results of these things. And until we correct them, they will continue to haunt us. There's no use going to somebody else to ask them how we can survive gloriously the consequences of our own mistakes. There are a lot of counselors that will take on the job, though, for reasonable consideration. They will tell us that we can do anything we want to do, and that all this idea of morality and ethics and so forth is something that is being used by the intellectuals to imprison the common man. That actually we can all be millionaires. Years ago, there was a man said, if you really want to be a millionaire, all you have to do is keep your mind on your second vest button and make sure that your chest is pushed out against it all the time. This does it. As I remember, he died poor. But in any event, we will have all kinds of advice on how to control other people, how to make the great steps forward into luxury and extravagance. We will be told that our morality is an interference with our success, that integrities are old-fashioned and out of date, that what we should do is scurry around and get other people into as much trouble as possible. Well, those giving this kind of advice are the ones who are building up some pretty bad karma, because they are perhaps going to sometime have to live in a world which is not that kind. Supposing at the next century there is a major shift and simple, honest values become important. We are no longer so ambitious about everything. We're perfectly happy to live along in comfort and peace and quietude, and that wealth will have lost all of its attraction for us. About this time, those who have been preaching the importance of wealth and power and all those things will come in again with the same preachment, and no one will be listening. Then no one will care. These people then will go through a terrible pressure of finding that all of their processes, all their willpower, all their determination is powerless against the common sense of an enlightened majority. The moment we become a little reasonable, all this unreasonable policy will vanish. The vast inflations will slow down the moment people think. And when we begin to do this, then we will have what is called good karma, which is really just normalcy. And the bad karma is simply unwillingness to keep the rules. And of course, the rules are all kinds of things. Everywhere there is a pattern. And if we want to study, or we want to read, or we want to examine into things, it might be good to try to a little basic summary of the basics of the various sciences, arts, philosophies, and religions, that we find how it all started, and that these things are kind of basic things growing up with us, and that somewhere in them we will find the answers to the problems that we need to know. It's very important, perhaps, to a scientist to put another ship on the moon or something, but it is also terribly important to cut down the divorce rate. we are going to find that we'll never be happy until we do the simple things well. And when we do the simple things well, we may discover that a lot of the difficult things are not necessary anyway. We are becoming too complicated. And in our complications, we allow infinite varieties of attitudes to destroy friendliness, to destroy companion ability, to make feuds that last for generations, dividing nations and races, and causing conflict everywhere. It's all just simply due to the fact we will not look inside of ourselves or understand the divine plan of things. It is because of this, in spite of all our feelings on the matter, that religion is probably the master of all arts and sciences. Religion is the most powerful thing in the world. But religion, caught in this trap, also prostituted in the name of profit and wealth and material power, has desecrated its own story. But beneath it all, the simple facts of the relationship between divine power and nature, between the human being and the universe in which he lives, and between each of us and our own neighbors. These spiritualized realities must be the basis of the civilizations that must rise if we're going to end this mess that we have made for ourselves. And even where it's a little difficult now, all of us, to a degree, can stop this reform motion if we want to. We can't ask and don't ask people to break up their whole way of life to change something, but we can find nice things beginning to creep in. We can find a little more friendliness, a little more patience, a little deeper and more satisfying love. We will find that domestic grievances do not necessarily have to break homes, that there is always a way in which a greater love will mend a lesser one. There is no reason why we should be building always to defend ourselves against hate. These things, little by little, we can overcome in ourselves. We can reach out and cure a grudge that we've had for a long time. We can live within our means and not have the fear and anxiety of debt. We can give a little more time to the children if we want them to give a little more peace to us in later years. Everything can be done the moment we begin to put values where they belong. And until we put values where they belong, we're not going to get the results. And anyone who tells us that we can have a peace we have not earned, a prosperity that is not firm in our own achievements, that we can be happy without deserving it, that we can be healthy and break all the rules of food, that we can be robust and everything and at the same time be on narcotics. Any type of instruction that does not demand the correction of the faults that have caused the ailment, any such instruction, and those who carry it on, will be part of a karmic load that they have to carry. For if we do what they make us do, or impel us to do, or advise us to do, and it is wrong, we will suffer. And because they have made us suffer, they will suffer too. There's no way around that perfectly frank, reasonable, natural fact. So each of us should stop trying to prevent suffering coming from us to anyone else. We must realize that we do not have to accept the wrong attitudes of other people. In many cases, we can transmute them. In any event, we can always meet them with a blessing regardless. They tell the story of the old monk in his cell who was copying a manuscript, and all of a sudden the devil came up through the floor. And the old monk was so busy working on his manuscript, they didn't even hardly look up. He just said, "Bless you, my son." And when he looked up, it was an angel. The difference was in himself. So until we know some better way of doing it, it's best perhaps for us to all bless each other and hope that we will not contribute in our own lives anything to the misfortunes of the world. Well, thank you very much, folks.